Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Tamura Daf Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Vav. You will notice a house shape around the word V'harei. We are, in effect, in the middle of a long sugya that we started in our previous shiur. We had featured a machloikis between Abaye and Rava concerning negative commands. Loisa says things that the Torah prohibits doing, if one goes ahead and does it, will it take effect or not? We indicated that the house shapes will appear in 2 different directions, some with the point of the house, the roof, facing upwards. They represent questions, challenges to Rava. Rava, he was of the opinion that if the Torah says not to do something and one goes ahead and does it, it does not take effect. With the house form flipped around, and in today's shiur number 14, you will notice, has that effect, it would be a challenge to Abaye, who happened to say that if a person does something contrary to the Torah, Abaye was of the opinion that it does take effect. Let us now continue with our sugya on the 6th line from the top. V'harei gezel, derachmon amar loy sigzoil. The Torah commands not to steal. Utnan, and we have a Tanaic source that says, Hagozel, eitzim vasom kelim. If a person stole wood and made them into vessels, formed the wood into something useful. Tzemer vasom begodim, stole wool and made it into clothing. Mishalem kishas hagzela. He pays according to the value of that which it was at the time of the theft. He does not, though, give over the new product, the kelim or the begodim, the vessels or the clothing. Rashi points out that this shows us that his effort here in stealing and then making it into something else does have an effect. It takes effect. His theft was, for lack of better expression, a beneficial or purposeful action as far as the thief is concerned. Of course, theft is a reprehensible crime, but it does have a benefit for the thief. Tiyufta the Rava. So this would suggest a challenge or a repudiation of Rava's point of view. Omalach Rava. Rava will respond. Shiny Hossam. There it is different. In other words, there's the Omar Kral, there's a special scriptural reference, a special pasuk that says, Asher Gozal. It says, Veheshiv es Agzela Asher Gozal. You shall return the theft that you stole. Now that Asher Gozal is an extra expression. It could have just as well said, Veheshiv es Agzela, and I would have understood the point. What is gained by Asher Gozal? Kemo Shegozal. The Torah itself is telling us that all the thief has to return is what the value was at the time of the theft. But as far as generally speaking, where you don't have a special Torah allowance or reference, if one does contrary to the Torah, it will not take effect. Ulabaye Hayashar Gozal. Now, according to Abaye, who says things will take effect anyway, so what do I need the Asher Gozal for? Miboyale? He needs it for the following points. Algzeloi Sheloi Moisiv Choymesh. Algzelo Shel Aviv Eino Moisiv Choymesh. A word of explanation is in order here. If a person steals something and then he swears that he does not owe anything, and then he confesses, so it becomes apparent then that he swore falsely. Because of that false oath, he has to add a fifth to whatever he has to return. So the point of Asher Gozal is to tell me that it's only for his own theft that he has to add a fifth in the event that he lies, not for a theft that his father had committed and sworn falsely. And if they come to collect from the heir, he, the heir, does not add a fifth. The Gemara continues, V'harei mashkoin. Mashkon is collateral, that a person who was owed money, he receives in lieu of the payment until the payment is actually made. So, V'harei mashkoin, derachmon amar loy sovel obeisoi, lavot avoto. The Torah says that the creditor shall not enter the house of the one who owes the money in order to take the mashkon. He is supposed to wait outside and wait for the court-appointed individual to deliver it to him, or for the owner, we'll say, the owner, the lender, the borrower, that is, to bring out the mashkon. So the creditor is not supposed to enter the house. However, utnan, it says, machsir esakar b'layla v'samachrei shabiyoyim. In the event that a person did take the mashkon by force, nevertheless, he is expected to give back those items that are needed for night use, like a pillow, and he then will get it back during the day, or a plow. Machresh is a plow. That's something used by day, so that the creditor who took the mashkon is expected to give it back to the borrower for his use by day and will get it back at night. So we see that even though he was told not to enter the house, if he does, he gets the mashkon and is considered it's considered his until the debt is actually paid up. In the interim, we expect of the creditor to provide the mashkon for the use and benefit of the borrower until that time comes. Hence, night vessels are to be returned at night, and then he repossesses it during the day, and likewise with regard to the plow. Kufta de Rava. This will repudiate Rava. Of course, according to Rava, since the Pasuk had said, Lo sovel beisel avod avoto, he shall not enter, if he does and takes a mashkon baal korcho, he takes it forcibly, he shouldn't be able to hold on to it even for a minute. Omar loch Rava. Rava responds, Shiny hosam. That case is different. The Omar kro hoshev toshiv lo. The Pasuk says, return it to him. So from this extra expression that the Torah is expecting him to return it, and it uses a double expression, return it and return it, indicating that there are multiple returns. So what must be happening? It must be that the item that the creditor had taken, he actually does take possession of. Now that he's taken possession of it, even though the Torah said not to enter his house to take it, but once he does gain possession, but he should return it every morning if it's a daytime item, or every evening if it's a nighttime item. But it's once again, it's from the special scriptural allowance or provision that he acquires it. Otherwise, he would not be able to acquire it. Ula Abaye, now according to Abaye, that he would acquire it anyway, even though the Torah says not to do it. Abaye's opinion is that if you violate a Torah precept, it does take effect. So what do I need this expression of Hoshev Toshiv Loi? Ilav Yomar Achmona Hoshev Toshiv. Had the Torah not said that, Havamina, I would have thought Isura Ovad, that he was in violation of this Isur, this prohibition of entering by force. E boy nahadir, e boy lo nahadir. And it's a matter of option for him to return it if he doesn't want to, so he wouldn't return it during those daytime or nighttime periods. Komash Malon, that it's not an option. He took it. He does gain possession of it. However, he is still obligated to return it during those time periods. Now, you'll notice how the house form flips over. This will be raised as a question, a challenge to Abaye's position. In other words, we're now going to learn about the topic of payah. This is a type of tithe whereby a person leaves a corner of his field unharvested as a provision for the poor to take it during the harvest season, to take the produce that's growing there. The pasuk Havarei Peah, the Rachmon Amar, regarding Peah, the Torah says, Lo sechale pasa adocha b'kutzrecha, don't cut down, finish the harvest. Don't finish the harvest to the extent that every last corner of the field is harvested. In other words, leave stuff growing. Utnan, and we have a Tanaic source in which we will see that if a person didn't leave a corner, but he went and harvested the whole field, continued processing the grains, eventually he will still have to leave payah. He will still have to tithe payah from the processed material. So we see from here that the Torah says, make sure you leave payah. Don't take it for yourself. And we'll see that he, in fact, is never successful in keeping it for himself. So this would be a challenge to Abaye. Abaye had said that if the Torah says not to do something, you did it, it does take effect. That, according to Abaye, would have expected the owner to retain the payah in the event that he harvested the last corner of the field. But we see he can't. Let us now see the whole case. Utnan, the Tanaic source tells us, mitzvahs payah lahafrish min akoma. The payah obligation is to leave it from standing grains. Lo hifrish min akoma, if he didn't leave any standing grains, yafrish min omrim, then he shall leave from the harvested sheaves. Lo hifrish min omrim, if he didn't leave for the poor any of the sheaves, yafrish min akri, then he shall leave from the piled grain after it's been threshed and smoothed over. Ad shalom yircho, until it's been smoothed over, the pile, when in processing grain after the threshing, the grain is piled up and then smoothed over. Mirchoi, if at this point a person not only threshed the grain but piled it up but smoothed over the pile, at this point another tithe kicks in. The obligation to mafrish, to tithe, the meiser tithe kicks in. Therefore, Ma'asro, first the owner is expected to take off and give to the levy his miser tithe, that's Ma'asro v'noseinlo, and then afterwards he will still have to give payoff from these processed grains. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amar af mafrish min oisa, if a person goes so far as to make it into dough, he still has to tithe the payah tithe. He still has to provide that to the poor. This then is a repudiation of Abaye. We see that the person in taking it is not successful in keeping it at any point. Omar loch Abaye. Abaye responds, shiny hosam. There, it's different. By payah, there is a special xeris akos of Yom HaKrov. The pasuk says, ta'zoiv yisera. Expression tazov means leave it for them. It appears in this context of payah several times. Rashi quotes the two references in the Torah to the term tazov, which then means you have to leave it under all circumstances, even if you processed it till the point it became dough. The Rava Amaloch. Rava, who doesn't need the extra pasuk for that purpose, because according to Rava, it's not effective anyway. Once you violate something the Torah says, your action does not take effect. So Rava says that the extra expression is to tell me the following: Yeshlecha azivo acheres shekazu. There's another case of someone having another issue concerning tithes or matnas aniyim that is like this. In other words, that he has to leave it for the poor under all circumstances. V'ezo, and what is the case this extra aziva word is referring to? Ze hamafkir karmo. That's a reference to the case of someone who declared unowned his vineyard. Now, in general, something that's unowned, that's hefker, is not obligated in any tithes. What's the special case of hefker referred to over here? Desanya, hamafkir karmoi, person declared his vineyard unowned. Vehishkim, he gets up early, vehishkim l'shachar u'botzer, then wakes up in the next morning and starts harvesting the declared unowned vineyard. He then, in the next morning, after having made this declaration, goes ahead and harvests it. Chayov beferet ve'oilolos b'shikol v'peah. He is obligated to leave these different forms of grape tithes for the poor. And the names of the tithes, without getting into specific descriptions of the different forms, they are called Peret, Oilulos, Shikha, and Peah. However, Upoter mina Meiser. He remains Poter from Meiser. The extra Ta'azov is not written in the case of Meiser. But in the case of these other tithes, Peret, Oilulos, Shikha, and Peah, the extra Ta'azov says that even in the case where the person was mafkirit, and we said before, something in general that is hefker, is not obligated in tithes. In this particular case where he harvested, he declared unknown the vineyard, the next morning he then went ahead and harvested it, he is still obligated to leave these four matnosanim, tithes to the poor, the Peret Oilulos, Shikha, and Peah. And that's derived, as far as Rava is concerned, from the extra Ta'azov word. Omar le Rav Acha, Brei de Rava lo Rav Ashi. V'hashto de Shaninon kol hani shinu. Now that we've arrived at this point in the discussion, in other words, we've answered each one of the challenges to Abaye and Rava respectively, so that it comes out, Abaye v'Rava b'may pligi. What are Abaye and Rava actually arguing about? If we look at Rashi at the bottom, there are cases that the one who violates the lav, it is effective. That the lav is the negative command. And there are cases where one violates the negative command and it's not effective. In all of these cases, Abaye and Rava agree. What are they arguing about? Is there any actual point of difference? If in all of these 14 challenges that we've learned till now, we've seen Abaye and Rava, each one explaining the case, but in each case, on final analysis, they agree with what was stated in each challenge. So what do they argue about? Before we go any further, we have a structural note based on our markings that are featured in the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. Mivneh is a structural note. You see Roman numerals 1 and 2 that appear. They will appear to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. They represent Shnei Lishonos, two versions. B'mai Pligi is featured in a bow tie shape. B'mai Pligi, Abaye and Rava, what are they arguing about? Achrei Kol HaNisyonos, after all of these attempts to ask on each one of these opinions, Ra'inu Shemodu Abaye V'Rava B'chol HaMikrim, that practically speaking, Abaye and Rava agree in all of the cases. So B'mai Pligi, what are they arguing about? So our Gemara goes on and says, B'ribis k'tzutza komiflegi u'che de Rebbe Elazar. The reference to Rebbe Elazar is really a reference to Rebbe Elazar and his argument with Rebbe Yochanan, which we will see shortly. Ribis k'tzutza is fixed interest. It's actually the type of interest that the Torah itself prohibits one to take, and that is a case where a person extends a loan and stipulates in the loan that I am giving you X amount, you will give me X plus Y as interest. That's a fixed interest rate in a loan situation. Now let us say that someone actually extended a loan like that and was paid the interest. Can the court extricate, take, remove, collect that back, charge him? In other words, is his collection, is the lender's collection of the interest going to be binding, or will he be able to hold on to it? So the Gemara continues, the Omar Rebbe Elazar, Ribis Ktsutza, Yoitze B'dayonim. This type of fixed interest is something that Dayonim, the judges, can collect from the one who charged it and took it. Avak ribis eino yoitze b'dayonim. Avak ribis is a case of interest that comes as a result of a sale. In other words, if someone says, I'm selling you a field, if you pay me now, it'll cost you X. However, if you pay me several months later, it'll cost you X plus Y. that's a form of interest, but it's not based on a loan, it's based on a sale. And that's called avak ribbis, literally the dust of ribbis, meaning not the main ribbis itself, but some type of variation on the theme. That, Rebbe Lozer says, judges, if a person does in fact charge it and collect it, the judges cannot take it from him. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, afilu ribis ktsutza eino yoytze bedayonim. Even if someone collects the worst form, the most serious form of ribis, judges cannot take it away from him. Now, Abaye will then go like Rabbi Yochanan, who says, mehani, that the collection is effective, even though it was forbidden to do, and hence he doesn't return it. Rava, on the other hand, will go like Rabbi Lozer, who says that the ribis ktsutza does have to be returned. At this point, then, we would seem to have an answer to the question of Imai Pligi. And we had seen Rav Acha ask Rav Ashi, so what are they arguing about? So Rav Ashi had answered, Ribis Ksutza is the point of Machlokes. Now, Rav Acha comes back and says, Omar Lei, Hosam Visvara Pligi. Do you think that over there they're arguing in a matter of something based on logic? Hasan Bikroi Pligi, the issue concerning the return of Ribis is not a machlokes based on Svora, like we saw by Abaye and Rava, each one arguing based on a Svora, a point of logic, where Abaye says, even though the Torah says not to do it, it takes effect anyway. That was not based on some type of scriptural reference. That was Abaye's point of view, his logical point of view. However, when it comes to the issue of the machlokis, Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yochanan, regarding the return or lack thereof of the ribbis, that's not a svora and logic-based machlokis. It's a scriptural-based machlokis, based on Xeris HaKosovs. So that it becomes a local controversy and not something that we would apply to, we would be able to apply based on logic to something else. So the Gemara explains, and this is Rav Acha's question. Note that we have this as a long question marking. To the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. At the end of that, the Gemara will come up with a new response to what Abaye and Rava are arguing about. So, as we go on in the Gemara, we see the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lozer explained, but based on psukim. Before going further in the Gemara, we should also note that there are some structural notes that need explanation. You'll see in the outside margin under the Mivneh heading, we feature diamonds. These are Gimel Makoros, three sources, Lemai Taimo de Rabbi Yochanan, three sources to explain Rabbi Yochanan, the Ribis Ksutza Eina Yotze Bedenim. Why would he say that fixed interest that's collected by the lender cannot be extricated from him by the judges? We've also double underlined with dots in it the expression Mai Taimo de Rabbi Yochanan and Mai Taimo de Rabbi Lozer, so you can see where the Gemara deals with the sources for each one of these opinions. So we continue now in the Gemara, reading again the third line from the top. Omar Lei, Rav Acha says to Rav Ashi, who had originally answered the question. Rav Acha asks, he says, Hasam b'svara pligi, hasam b'kroi pligi. There in the case of Ribis Ketzutza, they're not arguing based on logic, but rather based on scriptural references. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my time in Rabbi Yochanan. What's the basis of Rabbi Yochanan who says that ribis, even though someone collected the serious form of ribis, it's not yoytze b'dayanim. Judges cannot extricate it from him. Omar Kra, the pasuk says, b'neshech nosan v'sar bislokach v'chei lo yichyeh. The pasuk is describing someone who had collected ribis, and it says that, well, he won't live. L'chayim nitan v'lo lishavon. The issue of ribis is an issue of life, meaning someone who collects it, he won't live. However, that's the penalty, so to speak. However, as far as return is concerned, he doesn't return it. And Rashi adds, even Rava will agree because you have a pasuk, so it wouldn't be a point of controversy. Rava will agree with this approach. Rav Acha bar Ada Omar Mehocha, from the following pasuk, V'yoresa Melokecha Ani Hashem. This pasuk is in the context of a collection of interest. It says, you shall fear the Almighty. L'moira nesati v'oli shamon. The mitzvah of interest, the mitzvah meaning of resisting interest, is given to, we'll say, develop a fear of the Almighty. But loli shamon, there's no expectation of return, meaning if someone collected ribbis, so he's violated this element called yirah shamayim, fear of the Almighty, but that's it, not any other expectation. Rava Omar Mehocha, Hatoavois Hokeil, also Moishimas Domov Bo Yel Vioilud Ben Porit Shefech Dom. In this pasuk, there's a reference to the those who collect interest. This is from the same section of Sefer Yechezkel that we saw in the first pasuk that was quoted. And Rava says that from here, which speaks about the abominations that were committed, including the taking of ribbis, he shall die. And in this same pasuk, it makes reference to murder. Hukshu malve ribbis l'shofchi damim. In this pasuk, we see a comparison between lenders who lend with interest and murderers. Ma shofchi damim lo nitnu lishavon. Just like murder is something that cannot be returned. Af malve ribbis lo nitnu lishavon. So too, people who collect interest, there is nothing that can be returned. The Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, my time in the Belozer. Now, what's the basis for Belozer that said that ribbis ktsutza is yoytze b'dayonim? That someone who collects a fixed interest loan can be charged or collected from by the judges. The Omar Kro, the pasuk says v'chei achicha imoch. That is in the context of someone who collects interest. Ahadile, the Torah is saying, give it back to the borrower. Give the interest back to him. Kihehi dinehi imok, so that he can live with you, so that life can continue. Because interest itself is something that is a type of financial burden that we can say, in a manner of speaking, kills a person. So the Torah is saying, v'cheyachicha, in the case someone collected interest, give it back, so that you can continue living together. Well, if that's the case, then what are they arguing about? What are Abaye and Rava arguing about? Answer, b'shinui koine. They would be arguing about a case of someone who commits a theft, and he then changes the item into something else. So, according to Abaye, that says one who violates that which the Torah says, it takes effect. When the Torah says "Veheishiv es agzela asher gozal," return that which you stole, if it is as it was originally. However, if it has been made into something else, so then you're no longer expected to return it. To return that is, of course, the new item. He will have to pay only the value of the original raw material that he stole. According to Rava, who says that the theft has no benefit, has no effect, if you violated the Torah and that's it, so that even if you proceed to change it into something else, it doesn't help. And therefore, if you stole it, you have to return, you stole it and changed the raw material that you stole into a final product, you have to give back the final product. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a Roman numeral number 2. You can see that to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Lishno achrino bahani shinuyin deshaninon. This is a different version of the answer to the question of what are Abaye and Rover arguing about. So we continue, and you'll notice that the Gemara is actually quite similar in terms of the presentation of what they are supposedly arguing about. And again, you see the bow tie forms with an aleph and beis like we had in the original presentation. Beribis ktsutza la Abaye lo mahade ribis. According to Abaye, the fixed interest that was collected would not be returned. La Rava mahade ribis. According to Rava, mahade means return. The ribis, the interest, will be returned. The Gemara now asks a question, and you'll notice it lasts a few lines. It's a long question. You can see this indicated by the encircled kuf to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with the descending vertical dashed line. At this point, we had mentioned that Abaye says that fixed interest that happened to be collected does not have to be returned. How can you say that Abaye says it's not returned when Abaye himself holds that ribis ktsutza is collected by the courts, so the person can't hold on to it? The Omar Abaye, Hodein Demasik Bechavre Arba Zuzi Berubisa, someone who is trying to collect an interest payment of 4 zuz. Zuz is a type of coin. Viave Le Lamalva Begavose Glima Deshavi Chamisha Bearba. And the borrower pays the interest in the form of a glima. A glima is a garment, a coat that's worth 5. He's paying, in fact, more than the original interest, the interest debt happened to be. Ki mafkino mine. When we come to collect from the lender who received this 5 zuz value coat, dalid mafkino mine. The high zuzah b'matana hu diyohiv lei. According to Abaye, the courts will collect 4 zuz from the lender. The extra zuz that the coat happened to be worth, that was given as a gift. The Rava Omar chamisha mafkinon mine. Rava disagrees with Abaye on this particular detail, and says that the lender will pay the complete 5. My taimo, kula b'toras ribisa kosilia de. It came to him as a interest payment. He doesn't see a division between the 4 and 1, but all 5 zuz were part of an interest payment. The main point, though, for us is seeing Abaye's point of view, and that's why we've dashed underline Abaye, where ribis ktsutza is returned. So you can't tell us, as was said at the beginning, that would be a point of machlokis. Namely, Abaye says that if the Torah says something is prohibited to do, Abaye's original position was that it's effective, even though you violated the Torah precept. Here we see it's not effective. The taking of the ribis is not effective. So it can't be that the point of difference between Abaye and Rava concerning their original machlokis is the issue of ribis ktsutza. It's true, by the way, that there is still a difference between Abaye and Rava in this particular example, but as far as the issue of effectiveness or lack thereof in the violation of a Torah precept, we don't see that over here. Ela ki komif ligi Abaye v'Rava, what are they arguing about? B'shinui koine. Like we saw before, the issue of someone who had stolen raw materials, processed it into something new, is the thief able to hold on to the new item and simply pay back the value of the raw material? Abaye holding he can hold on to the new product that he formed. Rava saying no, he would have to return even the new product. Before going further in our sugya, we have a topic heading in the outside margin. Isurim hakshurim lemakdish umakdir bale mum. Different violations that are incurred when one sanctifies and offers a sacrifice that happens to be blemished. T Tonu Rabbonan. We have a Tanaic source, and we might as well point out that as the Gemara unfolds, there will be further explanations of this particular Tanaic source. The source begins, Kol asher boi mum loy sakrivu. All that which is blemished, you shall not offer. Ma tamud lomar. What's the point of this lo sakrivu, do not offer? Im beloy sishatu, if it's a reference to the prohibition of slaughtering as a sacrifice, that which is blemished, hari kvar omu lamato. There is another reference to that. And the Gemara itself will ask where is that other reference, but for the time being, it's already been stated. Ela ma tamud lomar lo sakrivu, so then what's the point of this pasuk? Answer, bal takdishu, don't even sanctify a blemished animal as a sacrifice. Mikan omru, from here we have the rabbi say, hamakdish balei mumin legabi mizbeach, one who sanctifies a blemished animal, and then goes ahead after sanctifying it, he goes and offers it as an ola, over mishum chamesha shemos, he is in violation of five different violations. Mishum bal takdishu, do not sanctify. Bal tishchatu, do not slaughter. Of course, all of these are references to the blemished animal. Umishum bal tizriku, do not sprinkle the blood. Umishum bal taktiru, do not offer it on the fire. Bal taktiru kulo, don't offer the entire thing on the fire. We're talking, for example, about a korban ola, which is entirely offered on the mizbeach. Umishum bal taktiru mitzaso, and a prohibition of even offering part of it. Mishum Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Amru, in the name of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, was said, Af Kabbalah Sadam, even the receipt of the blood right after the slaughter, the blood in anticipation of it being sprinkled on the altar, is received in a receiving vessel. So even Kabbalah Sadam, doing that act of a blemished animal, would be an additional violation. Omar Mar. Now, this form, this crown shape, is featured under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. Omar Mar, Tzitutim Meha Braisa. These are quotes from the Braisa that began with the words Kol Asher, the Braisa just before. This crown form, the Omar Mar, you will see again in Mirtz Hashem when we get to Daf Zayin. In other words, as we said before, points in the a couple points in this source will be elaborated on by the Gemara. So, Omar Mar, Im Bal Tishchatu, if the pasuk that opened up this previous source of Kol Asher Bo Mum Lo Sakuv is a reference to the slaughtering of a blemished animal, blemished sac. We're talking, of course, not to we're talking about in the context of sacrifices. So, Hare Omur Lamato, that's already been stated below. Heichon Omur, the Gemara asks, where? Which pasuk talks about the prohibition of slaughtering a blemished sacrifice? Desanya. Well, here we have a Tanaic source that features the sought-out pasuk. The pasuk is a pasuk dealing with blemishes in sacrifices. It says, Iveres, O Shavur, O Chorutz, O Yabelis, Lo Sakrivu. These are, without translating them, each one of them, they're different blemishes. Ma Tamud Lomar. What's the point of Lo Sakrivu in this pasuk? In Bal Takdishu, if it's a reference to the prohibition of sanctifying Harekvar Omur Lamala, that is the pasuk we saw above. We already had a pasuk for the prohibition of sanctifying. Elamatam Lomer Lo Sakrivu. So what does Lo Sakrivu over here mean? Bal Tishchatu, do not slaughter. The pasuk says, V'ishe Lo Sitnu Mehem Elu Ishim, things put on the fire. Ainli elo kulon. I understand from here only the prohibition of putting the entire sacrifice that is blemished on the fire. Miktsason minayin. What about putting part of it on the fire? Tamalomar mehem. The pasuk said, "Ishelo sitnu mehem." Mehem means from them, even part. Zrikas domen minayin. What about the source for the prohibition of sprinkling the blood? Tamalomar al hamizbeach. The pasuk says, Lashem, l'rabois soyer hamishtaleach. This comes to include one who sanctifies the Yom Kippur soir, goat, hamishtaleach, that sent to the cliff for atonement purposes on Yom Kippur. That one who sanctifies it as a Baal Mum will be chayav in Malkos, chayav in receiving lashes for this violation. Now that the Tanaic source mentioned at the end that the expression Lashem, which is found in the Pasuk, that is coming to include Larabois, we find the same expression Lashem, which is exclusionary. So at the outside margin we have a Noseya topic heading, Gzeres HaKosuv Shemar Be'Isur Balmum B'Soyer HaMishtaleach. The Tanaic source says, V'Hotanya, how can you tell us that the Lashem expression comes to include? We have the following Tanaic source, E. Korbon. This is a reference to Shchutei Chutz. Shchutei Chutz is the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. Before continuing, let us back up for a moment to make a correction. Correction regarding the topic heading for this particular section. Under our topic heading, we should read as follows. In the outside margin, Acharei Shekotoni, after it has been taught, Delashem Marbe Soyer Mishtaleach, Beisur Hakdoshes Balmum, after we finished reading a Tanaic source that said that the expression of Lashem comes to include what? The prohibition of sanctifying a blemished animal to serve as the Soyer HaMishtaleach, HaGemara Makshe, the Gemara will ask, Deroyim, the Bitui Lashem Bo Lema'it, that the expression Lashem comes to exclude, Ukitokartani Bebraisa, Shnia, as the second Braisa that is about to be learned says, the word Lashem comes to exclude Be'inyan Shchitas Chutz, within the context of the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. So, once again, the point is, does the term Lashem include? Well, we're going to see a source where we see the term Lashem excludes, and that will be our question. So now, that having been said, we read again from, we should also note that we have a long question marking, the kuf that you see encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a subsequent descending dashed vertical line, indicating the length of this question, which basically takes in this entire Tanaic source. The Gemara asks, "V'Lashem l'Rabbeisu, is it so that the expression Lashem is inclusive? V'ha Tanya, we have the following Tanaic source dealing with Shchutei Chutz, the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, "E Korban, if you see the word korban in the pasuk dealing with shchutei chutz. Shomeani af kotche berek avayis shenikru korban keinyan shenemar v'nikrav as korban Hashem. Would I conclude that even something sanctified for the temple repair fund, let us say someone had sanctified us a deer for the temple repair fund?" And he then slaughtered it outside the Beis HaMikdash. Would he be in violation of Shchutei Chutz? Well, we know that Kodshei Berek HaBayis, things sanctified to the temple repair fund, are also termed Korban, as this Pasuk V'nikrav as Korban Hashem indicates, which is by Berek HaBayis. Talmud Loimar V'el Pesach Ol Moed V'chulei. It says in that pasuk that he didn't bring the korban to the Beis HaMikdash. What do we learn from that? Haroi the Pesach Moed Chavamav Mishum Shutrei Chutz. Something that is fit to have been brought as a sacrifice, that if it is slaughtered outside, is a violation. She'ein ro'i l'pesach ha'moed, something that is not fit for the Beis HaMikdash, not fit as a sacrifice. Ein chayovim alav mishum shchut chutz. He is, if he slaughters that outside the Beis HaMikdash, so he is not in violation. Very simply, the violation of shchut chutz, of slaughtering outside the Beis HaMikdash, is only for something that was a candidate to have been slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. Not the case of kotshei bedek habayis. Otzi anias elu. Well, maybe I'll exclude kotshei bedek habayis. Velo otzi paras chatos v'sar mishtalech shein ruin lepesach ha'omoid. However, maybe I won't exclude the paras chatos is the para aduma. That's the red cow that's used for its ash, for purification of people who had defiled themselves to Tumas Meis. That's a cow that, in fact, has to be blemish-free. And also, there's a reference to the Soya Mishtalech, the sent-away goat that we made reference to before that takes place on Yom Kippur for atonement purposes. Let us say that was slaughtered outside. And those are things that must be blemish-free. Hence, they are things that were roi lepesach ha'moed. They could have been brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. So if I do slaughter them, and by the way, the Por Aduma is supposed to be slaughtered on the Mount of Olives, which is outside the Beis HaMikdash. So is there some kind of Iser Shchitas Chutz on these things? After all, they are fit to be brought as sacrifices. Talmud Lomar, Lashem. Mishim Yuchodim Lashem. Only things that were dedicated as sacrifices to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Yotzu Elu, to the exclusion of these, She'en Yuchodim Lashem. They haven't been specified as sacrifices. What's the main point, though? The main point is what we've dashed underlined. You see the term Lashem is an Yotsu Elu. Yotsu Elu was also dashed underlined, that the term Lashem is excluding these items. Whereas before, we saw Lashem, in the case of the Isser HaKdoshes Baal Mum, including the Sor HaMishtaleach. So, what's the role of the term Lashem? Inclusion, exclusion. Omar Rava. Rava answers, there isn't a concrete rule. It depends on the context. Hocha me'inyona dekro, hosam me'inyona dekro. It depends on the context. Hosam, in the case of Shchutei Chutz, ve'el Pesach, that expression is l'rabois. That comes to include. Therefore, once you have an expression that's inclusionary, so Lashem Lahotzi. It's a sort of like checks and balances. So there, the word Lashem will exclude other things. Hocha de'ishe Lahotzi. Here, with regard to the ishe lo sitnu mehem, referring to the Hakdoshas Baal Mum, where the ishe came to exclude. So, Lashem will, Larabos equals Larabos, will be inclusionary. Just to review some of the details over here, in the case of Shchutei Chutz, we said that El Pesach was Marbe. It's Marbe, all things, all blemish-free animals, as being Chayav in Shchutei Chutz, all blemish-free animals that were dedicated as sacrifices. So, if once you include all of those, Lashem's purpose is to exclude. However, with regard to the issue of the blemished animals and their sanctification, we saw the word, the ishe, is exclusionary. Therefore, Lashem will be inclusionary. Continuing in the Gemara, the Gemara asks, and we should point out the structural note on the outside margin, also containing a nosea topic heading. The triangles that appear in this upcoming section are ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. Point facing up, kushios, they represent questions. Point flipped over, tshuvos, answers. Lahasbir, lomot srichim gzeres akosav miuchod. Why do I need a special gzeres akosav, a special scriptural reference, l'rabo yisoy mishtalech lisur ba'amum, to include the soy mishtalech as being something prohibited as a blemished animal? Me'achar she'en ha'girl kaveya elul be'maruya. When we know, as a basic rule, that the drawing of lots, that it takes place on Yom Kippur in order to determine which of the, there are two goats that are brought, one is brought as a sacrifice, whose blood is ultimately sprinkled in the Beis HaMikdash, and the other of the two goats is the Sor HaMishtalech, in order to determine which one is the, what's called Sor LaShem, the sacrificial one, and which one is Lazazel, the one sent to the cliff to be pushed off and serve as an atonement for Klal Yisrael, that is accomplished by the drawing of lots. In order for the drawing of lots to be effective, we say that both animals have to be blemish-free, because we don't know which one is going to be the one chosen as the sacrifice. So once I have this basic rule that the lot drawing takes place only on two blemish-free goats, I don't need an additional Xeris HaKosuv to tell me that it would be forbidden to sanctify as the Sawyer HaMishtalech a blemished goat. So that is now the Gemara's question. Time of the Kosav Kro Lashem Hu De Lo Maisi Sawyer HaMishtalech Ba'amum. Is it only because I have this Lashem expression that I say a blemished animal cannot be brought as a candidate for being the Sawyer HaMishtalech? Ha lo rovi kro lashem have amino sermshach ba'mum shapir domi. Had I not had lashem, would I really have thought that a soyer hamishtalech could be with a blemish? Michti, but let's look into this. Ein hagoro koveya ela b'davar haroi. The drawing of lots, which is done on Yom Kippur, works only for animals, both of which could have been fit to be brought as the Sawyer LaShem. One of them is in fact chosen to be brought as a sacrifice, which everyone knows must be blemish-free. Since initially I don't know which one is going to be chosen, that's determined by the Goral, the lot drawing. So both of them have to be potential candidates for that. The question then is, what do I need the pasuk of LaShem that we said before, L'Rabois Sawyer HaMishtalech? And by the way, in order to make it easier to find where that reference was, we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you parallel it with the star above, you'll see where that point was made in the Braisa. Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef answers, Ha Moni, the source above that needs the posuk to the rabbis, the Sor HaMishtalech, Hanan HaMitzri Hi. This is the opinion of Hanan HaMitzri, the Omar. Hanan HaMitzri says that in the Yom Kippur service, if you have a situation that you had slaughtered the Soyer LaShem, the one that was actually chosen to be the sacrificed goat, and the goat that's supposed to be sent out to the cliff for atonement purposes, that happens to die. So Hanan HaMitzri says, Afilu dam bekois, even if the Sawyer LaShem is no longer alive, it's been slaughtered and the blood is in the cup in anticipation of its sprinkling. And as we said, the Sawyer Lazozel, the send-away goat, drops dead. Mevi chavero umezaveg lei. You bring another goat, and it will serve as its pair. Now, the Shita Mukubetzis, which we've highlighted in Os Tes Zion, you'll notice on the lower part of the page, the Gemara had said umezaveg lei. He comments umezaveg lei umashma lei shaloi bahagrola. It sounds like you just bring another one, a replacement Lazozel goat, without any lot drawing. V'im kein, if there is no lot drawing, lo bo'inon roi LaShem. then you don't need to have something that would be fit to be the sacrificial goat. V'af ba'mum. And as a result, I would think you could bring even a blemished animal to serve as the lazoseh the holoboinen roi lashem. I don't need one to serve as a potential sacrifice because I've got the blood already for that purpose in the cup. V'salka daitoch ba'mum shapir domi. So I would have thought without the lashem gzeres hakosuv that you could bring a blemished animal now to serve as the replacement for the send-away goat. So, according to Hanan HaMitzri, I need the word, the expression Lashem, to exclude bringing a blemished animal as the replacement send-away goat, the replacement Sori Lazozel. The Gemara asks, are you so sure that Hanan HaMitzri is the one that will need the Lashem? Nehi deshamis lei l'chana mitzri delo have dichoi. Granted that Chana Mitzri is of the opinion that something is not cast away. Dichoi means pushed away, meaning that the soyer lashem that had been slaughtered already. True, its mate, the soyer, the sendaway goat, dropped dead, so that there's a, we'll call it a problem in the process. Nevertheless, Chana Mitzri says that is not cause for us to push away the blood from the sacrificed Sori Lashem. That's called, there's no dichoi. Granted, so Chonon HaMitzri has this, we'll call this expanded approach, or it's a form of leniency, if you will, that we don't push something away, we don't cast something away as being unfit. However, Dolo Tzor HaGrola Mi Shamis Lei, to suggest that Chana Mitzri has no hagrola requirement for determining the new Sawyer Lazozel, who says that he doesn't have a hagrola requirement? Dilma Maisi Magriel. Maybe you actually have to bring two goats and draw lots to determine which one is the send-away goat, and the one that was chosen to be Lashem, it's true, I don't need it, but the main point, because well, we say we don't need it because we have the blood from the first one, nevertheless, since Hagrola might still be necessary, I have to have them both being blemish-free, simply because a Gorol is effective only on blemish-free animals. So that to suggest that I need the Lashem to exclude a blemished animal for Sawyer HaMishtalech, and say that that's Chana Mitzri's opinion, not so. Elo Omar Rav Yosef, Ha'amani, the source above that needs the Lashem for the purpose of the, to exclude a blemished animal for Sawyer HaMishtalech, that is according to Rabbi Shimon Desanyo. The source says, Meis Echod Mehem, if one of the goats dies, we have the two goats needed for the Yom Kippur atonement process. If one of them dies, mevi chavero belo hagrola, divrei Rabbi Shimon. You bring a replacement one without any lot drawing. So in our case, if the you had the Sawyer Lazozel that dropped dead before it was sent out, all you do is you bring one more goat, and it shall be the send-away goat. It's the replacement one without any drawing of lots, because you're only bringing one other, according to Rabbi Shimon. And since you are bringing it without drawing lots, maybe you could bring a blemished animal to serve as the replacement Sawyer Lazozel send-away goat. Therefore, I need Lashem to tell me, no, you can't. Even though you're not drawing lots, you still cannot bring a blemished animal. Rovo Omar Loi Nitzrucha Elo kegoin shehumum boi bayom vechiluloi al chavero. Rava says that I need the special scriptural reference for excluding a Sawyer Lazozel that happens to be blemished for this particular case, where it developed a mum, a blemish, after the lot drawing took place. So once it develops a blemish after the lot drawing takes place, he then goes ahead and redeems it, the chilulo al-chaver, redeems it onto another animal. Salkodai tachamina, I might have thought that bishlama meikora loyodana ihai mikbalashem, before the lots were drawn, So I need to have both blemish-free because I didn't know which one would be chosen as the sacrificial goat. Aval hocha, came on the inker shame, lo lucky. But here, in this case where the Soyer Lashem has been identified, and the Soyer Lazozel is the only one that is problematic because it now developed a mum, so I could redeem it. Chilo, I can redeem it onto something that happens to be with a blemish. And there would be nothing wrong with that. Komash Malon, that's what the term Lashem comes to cover. This case, that for redeeming it, the now blemished Soyer Lazozel onto another animal that happens to have a blemish, that would be guilty of a violation, as is referred to in the Pasuk, and that's all learned from the expression Lashem. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.